Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back. This is quarter number three of the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network, KeystoneSportsNetwork.com, and the Keystone Sports app. I'm Dustin Hawkinsmith. As promised, Tyler Donahue from Lions 247 joins us now. Tyler, how are you?
I'm doing well, Dustin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I guess we'll be pretty much weekly from here on out. I don't want to commit, you know, for anything too far, but you'll be hearing more of Tyler, I think, given his insights on the current team and on the recruiting process. So we're looking forward to that. I wanted to ask you just about the couple, you know, big themes of the day. And really, I think coming off the weekend, the idea of James Franklin being overrated. What did you think when you saw the CBS Sports anonymous coaches poll who, 20% said James Franklin's overrated?
Yeah, I think we're ready for real football. You know, this is the last little burst of off-season news, and this is the kind of stuff that tends to happen. Yeah, I mean, it's stirred up the pot for sure. I mean, him and Willie Taggart received the most, I guess, votes in that regard. And, you know, I think Franklin, I mean, just what he did in Vanderbilt, I think you can just point to that. He won 9 games twice, and the team has won 8 or more games once, aside from that, since 1956. So that's even before he gets to Penn State. That's quite an accomplishment. And then, you know, your listeners obviously know very well what he's done with the Nittany Lions. I think it's funny to see a lot of people pointing to his overall record at Penn State rather than the fact that he's 20-3 since October 2016. You know, the fact of the matter is those 3 losses were against teams that finished the season ranked 3rd, 5th, and 15th. So, and they were all away from home. So I think, you know, people try to say just because he's successful doesn't mean he's properly rated, but I don't know what the rating system is. I didn't see a ranking, and so I don't know how you can say he's overrated or if he's not exactly rated. So in my opinion, he's doing a great job of Penn State. He did a great job of Vanderbilt, and I think he'll hang his hat on that. But it'll feel like his player a little bit, and this is, you know, the last second bulletin board material that teams quite frankly love to get. So I'm sure he'll use this to his advantage.
Yeah, I think he always does. He's one of the more deliberate guys, and I think how deliberate he is something that maybe Penn State fans didn't realize about him before he got here from Vanderbilt. And I just think I don't know how this is evidence based. I put it this way off the air that, you know, there's a clear tier of elite coaches who are national title type coaches. Your Urban Meyers, your Nick Sabans, your Dabo Sweeney's. I think James Franklin is firmly entrenched in the next tier down. And if he's not in that national championship, that elite of the elite coaching category, which I still think he can be, then I just don't see how any way you slice it or dice it, he can be overrated.
Right. I mean, Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, he went to the national championship game there, got throttled by Alabama. Les Miles isn't coaching right now. He won a championship with LSU. So I think that's part of it, you know, being in championship games and Franklin and Penn State have knocked on that door. But I think you combine the wins and you combine the recruiting success. And those are the 2 things, at least publicly, that we can kind of measure coaches by. And Franklin's checking a lot off that list.
Let me ask you about this run of summer news where guys are leaving the game of football behind. Torrence Brown was the latest, and I think of the 5, including Ryan Buchholz, Jordan Miner, Nana Asidu, Jake Zembeck, of the 5, this is probably the least surprising just because it was a very public injury. It happened on the field, and everybody knew that it was pretty bad to begin with. But what's your take on this, whether it's a run of bad luck or if it's strange, as James Franklin put it, on where this comes from and how unprecedented, I guess, it is?
Well, yeah, what is it, 5 retirements in 6 weeks? It certainly is strange. And what stands out to me above all this is the 2 freshmen, Nana and Jordan, having to step away from football right on the precipice of taking this huge, you know, leap for them. And I think, you know, either of those guys, especially Nana, had legitimate NFL opportunities maybe awaiting down the line if things went right at the college level. And for them not to really even get a chance, you know, to put on the uniform, to run out of that tunnel. Thought it was cool they were part of the team photo and got to wear the uniform over the weekend, but you know, that was particularly difficult getting to know those guys and how excited they were to get on campus, getting to know their families a little bit, hearing their backstories when they were in high school. But I think you're right. Torrence Brown is one that, you know, is the least surprising. I don't think many people anticipated we'd see him on the field this year. And Ryan Buchholz is one that you just got to feel for the kid. Clearly, he wanted to give it a go. But, you know, when you think long-term, and his back is consistently bothering him right now based on what he put out there on social media, you know, what's he going to feel like when he's 30? And I think, you know, you got to make the right decision. You got one body, like you said. And I think that is the one that stands out the most in terms of who could have really helped the team this year. You got to look to Ryan. I don't think Jake Stenback was going to have a role at quarterback this year unless things went really wrong. So I think that's the one that stands out to you short term. But personally for me, I think it's the two freshmen. And, you know, you never really hear about that. Not one guy is a big deal. Two guys with heart conditions before they get to play is a really strange thing.
It's the Keystone Kickoff Show, talking to Tyler Donahue from Lions 247, all about Penn State football, the freshman class, this run of retirements. And I want to touch on that for a moment. I also wanted to remind you, our buddy Mark from GoPSURV.com. Season opening weekend is renting RVs for half price. You can check it out at GoPSURV.com. There's an open house Friday from 6 to 8 p.m., from 9 a.m. to noon on Saturday, to come check out his inventory, what he's got going on at GoPSURV.com. Let me look ahead with these retirements, and especially with Nana Acedo and Jordan Miner. These are two guys who I think, whether it was 1, 2, 3 years from now, were going to be staple-type players, starter-type players. You know, now you take them out of the mix. How does have you really kind of crunched the numbers about and trying to figure out how this impacts either the 2019 recruiting class or their approach going forward, where they're looking for an extra corner or looking for an offensive lineman?
Yeah, I mean, I think the tackle was already a priority position in this cycle, and then when you take Donna out of the mix for the next 2 years, wouldn't be surprised if this ends up being a 5 offensive line class. There's 3 guys on board right now that had a recent decommitment, but I certainly see them adding at least one more perimeter offensive lineman in this class, and maybe adding another after that. We'll find out. They got a good one on campus in Rasheed Walker, but seems like Juice Scruggs and Bryce Hefner are both going to be interior linemen, so I think you look at the perimeter, got to address that in 2019. And then, you know, the cornerback position, I think defensive back in general right now in the 2019 class, there was a time where it seemed like it might be kind of a luxury addition. Maybe you had some guys that you leave the door open for, kind of best player available in the defensive secondary. Now maybe this encourages you to go out and get somebody a little more aggressively, because let's face it, you know, Isheem Young was a late cross off the list last cycle because of off-field issues. So you only signed 3 defensive backs, and now you're down one in the 2019 class, I should say. So yeah, I anticipate that they will see movement on both those positions, and because, you know, those are spots that you thought you had accounted for.
Let me ask you about the 2018 class that came in. They came in a staggered way, January, May, 2 little waves in June before they got there. And a lot of these kids came in there in terms of their bodies and their strength. They just look like they're more ready than your average freshman class. Why do you think, you know, I can't help but wonder, you know, is this class leadership from some of the kids within the class, or whether it's a directive, or whether the redshirt rule comes into play? But not only to have a really good talented class with elite talent at the top that's really deep, but also come in so prepared, and it looks like you're going to see more, a lot of these kids have roles this year. I just wonder what all the ingredients are here to this class being so ready.
Well, this class has been talking about competing for national championships since, you know, this time last year. You know, just speaking with these guys, you know, when they maybe, I think last year, last summer, when they got a bunch of around last bash, I really felt like the class was starting to take an identity. And it was a confident, it was, you know, they were talking about championships, but they were also talking about earning championships. And I think that starts to me with Jesse Luketa setting the tone. I think he's an outstanding leader. I think if he stays healthy, he's going to be a captain maybe for a couple of years down the road on defense. And then I think Micah Parsons, I think clearly he has bought in as well. So with those two guys kind of, you know, serving as leaders, kind of keeping everyone accountable with the way they work, I think that's huge, that's a trickle-down effect. But overall, I mean, let's face it, there's a reason this group is ranked highly, because a lot of these guys were considered prospects who could come in, make an impact early, you know, at a lot of different college programs at the Power 5 level. So, and I'm not surprised to see some certain names jump up as guys who could be out there, you know, September 1st all the way through the entire season. You know, P.J. Mustafer, defensive tackle, Jesse Luketa, Micah Parsons, Justin Schroeder. One thing that stands out about all these guys, aside from their physical prowess, very much mature on the football field, many of them off the football field. They understand what's expected of them, nothing surprising them. It'll be interesting with the redshirt rule, as you mentioned. I think the goal is to get a lot of these guys looks against Appalachian State, against Kent State, and see where things stand after that. I think the leash will get pulled back on a few of them, but I think we'll see some guys really show what they're capable of and earn a long-term role to burn that redshirt.
What percentage would you say, how about for Jason Owe? Because we don't hear about, we haven't heard a lot public from James Franklin about him, but he is so super talented, and there might be an opportunity there now in that rotation.
Yeah, I mean, he's somebody that I was as high on as anybody, you know, across the country evaluating this recruit. 2 years of high school football, a basketball convert. He's a guy who's already almost up to 250 pounds. Speaking with Therese Miller last week after practice, who's now the, you know, kind of the older guy in that defensive line room. He says he's got Jason away on his hip all the time, really trying to bring him along. But I do get the sense, you know, speaking with some people in the program that it may be a year away and it may be really, really special when that happens next year. But we'll see. I think that he's somebody, they may get out in a few situations here early in the year or maybe late in the year if they get some looks at him. And I'm telling you, he can be extremely special. He could ultimately prove to be one of the best defensive prospects nationwide from the 2018 class. But I think it's just careful to tap the brakes a little bit because the sport is so new to him and there are so many intricacies and details that you need to encounter making that transition to college. So, you know, I'm sure everything's moving at a high speed for him, but he is a special talent and he's another extremely mature kid, intelligent kid. So, when he puts it together, it's going to be something to behold.
And then last thing here, about 40 seconds. What did you make of Jahan Dotson making such an impression? It wasn't a huge surprise to me, considering how his film looked in high school.
Yeah, I will say for him to be the first freshman that Franklin referenced after, you know, after their first few days of practice, he was the first name, not just receiver. That was big to me because Justin Shorter was the number one guy in the nation, so I think a lot of us focused in on him with this receiver group. They've got the three redshirt freshmen at receiver, so you wondered who was really going to get to make a move from that true freshman group. And then throwing the fact that Jahan Dotson committed and signed on the same day that Micah Parsons committed and signed, that got lost in the shuffle for some people, I think. So huge, huge props to Jahan Dotson for coming here and earning the respect. Trace McSorley actually mentioned him as well. So I think that speaks volumes about where he's at right now in his development, especially when you think about his junior year breaking two bones in his leg. He's come back really strong, and he looks really developed. He looks a lot bigger than last time I saw him in a high school uniform. I would say that much.
That's Tyler Donahue from Lions 247 talking Penn State football. That's on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Got more show coming up. Ask Greg is coming up right after this. Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right. Go PSU RV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single-game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon. Stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to gopsurv.com and reserve your RV today.
Life gets complicated, and it only gets more complicated when things change, which is why AAA insurance agents take the time to talk with you so that they can help you choose the best auto and home coverage. Don't put off getting protected. Let AAA help cover what you care about. Insurance that's not just insurance. Talk to your local AAA insurance agent or visit AAA.com to learn more about AAA.
409 Tailgate Club proudly introduces our tailgate wines. Like our great sauces and rubs, you'll enjoy our wines at your next cookout, tailgate, or even as a great gift for that fan of the blue and white. Speaking of blue and white, you've got to try our award-winning Sapphire Blue, made from pure blueberry juice. Or how about our Old Main Pinot Grigio and 1855 Vidal? Go to tailgatewine.com and find all our PA preferred wines. That's tailgatewine.com.